Welcome to another broadcast of Celebrating Truth with Dr. E. Faye Williams, Esquire, on the Artist First Radio Network. Dr. Williams currently serves as National Chair of the National Congress of Black Women and President of Natural Health Options. All past shows can be downloaded free on demand. Visit the archives for Dr. Williams and Celebrating Truth at artistfirst.com. And now, here's your host, Dr. Williams.
Thank you so much, Tony. Hello, I'm Faye Williams, your host for Celebrating Truth, brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women. Our Celebrating Truth producer is Ms. Clem Clark from out in San Francisco, and last week, the week before, actually, she and I did a year in review and had a great time. Clem has hosted the show in my absence, and she brings a whole lot of great people to us, and we're just so grateful for her. And she always wants me to remind you to have you follow us on Twitter, follow Celebrating Truth on Twitter at CTruthProducer, and also join our new Facebook Celebrating Truth page. Well, we're here this evening on a snowy evening in Washington, D.C. We've been wondering when that snow was going to come along, and it's here now. We want to remind our listeners to not forget one of the main events of this year, the 2012 elections. And, of course, the Republicans are already campaigning 24-7, and some of them are saying some outrageous things. But during the next several months, we will keep you updated with some challenges to voting in 2012, sort of like an orchestrated effort to prevent certain people from voting. Well, at any rate, don't you forget to register and get your own registration in order and register for the party on which you want to vote, so that you can help to decide your party's nominee. I know one party is already decided. I know what my party is, and I know I've made up my mind, but there are many people who might not have. So remember what you support and match those things up with the candidates who are saying those things truthfully. And I think it's easy to find the choice then. Celebrating Truth is brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women, the number one organization dedicated especially to the needs of black women and their families. And we invite all of our listeners to visit us on www.nationalcongressbw.org. That's www.nationalcongressbw.org. And you'll find a whole lot of great information there. But we're going to get right into our discussion because we've got a lot to talk about this evening. Our first guest is my good friend, Mr. Johnny Barnes, who's also an attorney. He's my lead co-counsel on a case we're doing next Tuesday, as a matter of fact, for Dick Gregory, whom you've heard on this show many times. We got to see the judge doing, you know, what we know how to do best. That's working to protect the rights of poor and underserved people. But again, welcome to Celebrating Truth, and let's welcome attorney Johnny Barnes. How are you?
I'm great, Faye, and thank you so much for having me. I'm honored, really, to be able to be present on your show, one of the leading thinkers and scholars and head of an organization in America. I'm just pleased to be here.
Well, thank you for that pat on the back, and I know that you said something that I really love. It's a tagline on your emails. Every human being on this planet residing in a nation with representative government enjoys political standing, except those who happen to reside in Washington, D.C. We must change that. You and I live in Washington, D.C., so let's get right into that subject. Now, I had the good fortune to attend the program you had on Saturday, and I know that you had a teach-in and a concert. And so just tell our listeners a little bit about why that teach-in, why that concert.
Well, Faye, I think perhaps the last voting rights challenge for America rests with the situation, our status in Washington, D.C. You know, there was a time when women couldn't vote, and we corrected that. There was a time when black folks couldn't vote, and we corrected that. There was a time when 18-year-olds could go to war and not vote, and we changed the Constitution to correct that. And so this is the last voting rights challenge. America is out of step with the world community because the people in our capital, the capital of the greatest nation on earth, are not able to have the same voting rights as all other Americans. We're out of step with the rural community. They take care of that every place else. And so for the past three summers, we have held a teach-in and concert on the West Lawn of the Capitol to dramatize that point. And we thought this year, as we near a presidential election, it might be good to have a winter teach-in. So we have an evening of education and entertainment, and we were at the Carnegie Institution on a beautiful January day. And we had seminars and then a concert, and everybody had a good time after learning about the importance of this cause.
Now, you know, one of those teach-ins, I guess, or panels that I heard dealt exactly with, you know, voting, voter suppression, and I had some very good friends on that panel who talked about it. What do you think is the biggest challenge to the District of Columbia getting the right to vote? Does it have anything to do with suppression, or does it have to do with not enough of us are involved in the statehood movement, or just what is it?
Well, I think education is perhaps the greatest challenge, because the polls show, and Pew has done a poll on it, that when people know of our plight, 80% of them will support us. We even need to educate our own folks here in Washington, D.C. So education is the biggest challenge to moving this idea of D.C. statehood forward. But Senator Ted Kennedy, when he was alive, coined a phrase that he called the four twos. And he said, we have to overcome those hurdles, that the district is too democratic, too urban, too liberal, and too black. The senator thought that those interests who are opposed to folks for those reasons would be the hardest to get to understand its most basic and fundamental right, and that's the right to fully participate in the shaping of the laws under which we must be governed. One person, one vote. That's been the law of the land forever. But because of the 4-2, Senator Kennedy believed, we're going to have a harder time getting it done than we may have had but for those things.
Well, I know Senator Kennedy must have been right, but I've noticed a lot of people who don't look like us have been moving into the district. You think that might be a little bit helpful to us in some ways? Or, I mean, I notice there are a lot of young people. Maybe I just don't meet the right people, but I see a lot of young people, and many of them, I think, are relatively in the same position I'm in or that you would be in. We want that voting rights. Have you met any of the newer people moving into the district, and do you find that they, too, want statehood?
Well, it's interesting because there's a branch of the Occupy D.C. movement, which is now a national movement, the Occupy movement, that went on hunger strike, and they're young Caucasian people who believe very passionately about D.C. statehood, and they gave up their bodies. So these folks are getting involved. But you know, I think the race question is less important to these members of Congress. I think in some ways the fact that we're a majority black city could help, because you can put them on a guilt trip about denying black folks in Washington, D.C. We have women here who can't vote. We have blacks who can't vote. We have 18-year-olds who can't vote. All of those hurdles were overcome in the past, and they ought to overcome it now for the people of Washington, D.C. So race is a factor always for some.
Well, you know, it would seem that it would be easy to get the Senate to support it, or easier than perhaps the House, because the Senate could then get over that stigma of having no black people in the Senate. I think that would be attractive to them.
Well, you know, Faye, I think the quiet word, and let me just say, I don't mean to put you on the spot. You're the one supposed to be asking the question. But I think the National Congress of Black Women can put a statue in the rotunda. Y'all can put a star on the 51st state.
Oh, wow.
It's probably better, you know, you put a statue in the rotunda.
Oh, let me tell you, I got a lot of gray hair behind that.
But I'm saying that you got a lot of power, so I'm delighted to be talking with you about this. But, you know, I think that what we have to do is, and you took note of the folks who were with us on Saturday. One of the presenters is the Deputy Chief of Staff for the Majority Leader, Senator Reid, in the Senate. And I've often talked to him about the fact that, And we have to say this quietly. This can't be a part of our public presentation, although we're on the radio here, Faye, is that the only real chance of having the consistent presence of blacks in the Senate And you need that. You have to have that. You can't reflect America without that.
Well, that's what I thought. I was thinking if we had at least, you know, the statehood, we'd have at least some representation.
Some representation because, you know, we had Ed Brooke for a while from Massachusetts, and, mm-hmm. and we got Deval Patrick, but those are shots in the dark. In Illinois, every now and then, we had Carol Moseley Braun and then Barack Obama, and those are gone. Meek tried to break in through Florida. But, you know, those are shots in the dark. If we mm-hmm. want a fairly permanent opportunity for black representation, you know, the Senate is a club, and they divide up the world. They say, okay, you take Israel, you take Ireland, you take the, mm-hmm. And then when it comes to Africa, who has the diaspora? So that's our quiet message to get, mm-hmm. you know, folks all around the country to understand why it's not just a D.C. issue. It's not parochial. Mm-hmm. This is it's a national, international issue.
Okay, well, now you had a very mixed program on Saturday. You had, you know, panels, as I said. You had the concert. Of course, we were entertained and had a great time. But what was your major hope that you would accomplish on Saturday, and why was that so important?
We hope to educate and inspire. And, you know, Faye, there has been no movement in history without music, whether it's Yankee Doodle Dandy, the Battle Hymn of the Republic, Star Spangled Banner, whether it's... you know, in the Vietnam War, we ended the war with that song, All We're Saying Is Give Peace a Chance. Mm-hmm. We had the We Shall Overcome that helped us usher in the 64 Civil Rights Act and the 65 Voting Rights Act. The Martin Luther King Holiday Bill languished for years, decades, until Stevie Wonder put to music, it doesn't make much sense. There ought to be a law against. Happy birthday. So mm-hmm. music is so important to movement, and so that's why we combine education and entertainment. We had the Leonard Coleman and Blunt. Those are former lead singers of the Temptations, Drifters, and Platters, and they performed brilliantly. We had Ayanna Gregory, daughter of the struggle, daughter of Dick Gregory, whose message is so unique and voice is so beautiful. She is a beautiful flower in her song. And then Chuck Brown was there, and he wasn't supposed to get on the stage, but
he was invited.
When he heard the D.C. statehood song that mm-hmm. Leonard Coleman and Blunt sang in the go-go genre, they gave respect to Chuck because he created. He's the godfather of go-go. He couldn't help but get up on the stage, and he did something to that song. I mean, I don't know what he did, but he took the house to a higher level, as they say. So we had that kind of entertainment. And then, as you noted earlier, we had brilliant Wade Henderson and Daryl Thompson, the deputy chief of staff for Harry Reid, and Keenan Keller, who's the top lawyer for John Conyers on the judiciary. And
Greg Moore, who worked on the motor voter bill for Congress.
Motor voter bill. I mean, we had the firepower and the brain power in that room to get the statehood bill done by themselves. So I was just delighted with it. It was an exciting time, an inspiring time. So in short, to answer your question, the idea was to educate and stimulate, and we did that, I believe.
Well, I took my sister and my girlfriend, Johnny Scott Rice, who also happens to be the chair of the D.C. chapter of the National Congress of Black Women, and I'll tell you, I almost had to hold her in her seat. I mean, she was so excited, and as you said, I know that people really get involved if for no other reason to go back to an event or to be involved. If you say that you're going to have those brothers, Leonard Coleman and Blunt, yes. I know she would be there and learning more about the movement, although she's highly political herself and knows a lot about it.
Yes.
But I'll bet you could count her in the number that would come out when you call people to come out.
Absolutely. And you know what it does? It opens up the floodgates of memory because they sang those songs, My Girl and Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. And I mean,
ain't too proud to beg.
Ain't too proud to beg. That's when music was music, you know.
I always call it that music you could understand the words.
That's right. You understand the words. And a couple of my buddies were there from college, and we got up and with our arthritis, and we was just, you know, we took the Geritol later. But it was just a great evening. I had so much fun. And I'm glad you could join us because you put a statue in the rotunda.
Yeah, Yeah, we cracked that. The Senate and the House, right? We got it there. As it took a long time.
That's what I'm saying. And folks don't know the what that really means. That's a great thing that you got done, and it takes a lot to get that done.
I just hope, Johnny, it serves as inspiration to people, and I did hear a few of the speakers allude to it, that these things take time.
They do.
And I know that the people who've been working on statehood for years, some of them, not you, because I know you're not giving up, but some of them may want to give up, but that's just about the time that you're getting something going and know that it does take time.
Well, you know, Faye, I had lost faith because I don't wear coats in winter. And my boss had me out there walking in front of the South African embassy talking about free Nelson Mandela, mm-hmm. singing that chant.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm freezing, and I'm thinking, why am I out here? They'll never free that man. They will never free that man. But
mm-hmm.
but because people got arrested and demonstrated mm-hmm. and gave up themselves, Nelson Mandela was freed. He was elected president. And then the man who kept him in jail for 27 years was invited to the inaugural ball. And you see, you can grab victory from the arms of defeat. I saw it happen. I was on that hill for 25 years as a staff member for four different members of Congress. And I saw victory grab from the arms of defeat on countless occasions. The King Holiday Bill, as I said, had languished. And then when Stevie Wonder came and those 100,000 people gathered on the West Lawn, victory was grabbed from the arms of defeat. I've seen it happen. It can happen with this D.C. statehood bill. I believe it. I remember you can feel a movement, Faye, and I don't mean to carry on here, but you can feel a movement. I remember when my mother and her sisters, the Craig sisters, got on a bus. They couldn't even say his name right to hear a young preacher in Washington, D.C. They didn't have Facebook or Twitter. There was no such thing as a flash mob. They had no computers. They talked to each other across the fence posts when they were hanging out clothes, and they all came to Washington, D.C., and as a consequence, ushered in the 64 Civil Rights Bill and the 65 Voting Rights Bill, because the power of the people is stronger than the people in power. It always is. And that's what's going to happen with this D.C. statehood bill. We have a movement here when Mayor Gray gave of himself, you know, to the criminal justice system. We have a movement with these folks, and it's happening in D.C. You can feel it. You can touch it. And the unavoidable will inevitably occur every time.
Those of you who are just joining us, this is Celebrating Truth. I'm Faye Williams, your host, and we're talking with Attorney Johnny Barnes. Now, is the ACLU involved? I know that you work with the ACLU. Are they involved in the statehood movement?
The ACLU, both nationally and locally, has as part of its policy the support of D.C. statehood. What we need to do is grow coalitions around the country in every state and make the ACLU a part of that coalition, along with the NAACP, along with the National Urban League, along with Common Cause, the League of Women Voters, AFL-CIO, all the progressive groups, and even the Tea Party people who should be for this because it's about the rights of individuals. And of course, the National Congress of Black Women. We need... And I keep going back to this. As I said, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you all have an apparatus that can either join or lead these coalitions around the country, and we can get this done because it's a parochial issue. We're little old Washington, D.C. Nobody's going to listen to us.
Well, yeah, but I wanted to ask, though, why should listeners all across the country be concerned about D.C. statehood?
Because it's a blight on America's democracy. We can't talk about freedom in Kabul and not have freedom in D.C. We can't try to extend the perimeters of democracy around the world and let it come to a screeching halt in the shadow of the Washington Monument. It's a contradiction. And everybody knows that a war was fought to end the tyranny of taxation without representation. And it isn't right to have that tyranny still existing in the capital of the greatest city on earth, Washington, D.C., and no one will deny that we should be the same as everybody else. They might argue over how to do it, but the only way to do it and make it permanent, only permanent way to do it is D.C. statehood. Takes a simple act of Congress, doesn't take a supermajority, just a simple majority, presentment to the president, Barack Obama, who will be reelected, you write that down.
Mm-hmm.
Barack Obama has said he'll sign the bill if we get it to him. Mm-hmm. So the stars are aligning, and we just need to get it done in the Congress, and that starts in the states.
Now, I heard the mayor last night speaking on another subject that has been plaguing us in D.C., and that is gun violence. Although I must say that it has gone down tremendously, it's not down low enough. But he stated that he would be going to New Hampshire because they would have statehood on in the New Hampshire legislature. Is that another way that we should be working with our friends in other states, asking their legislatures to support us?
Absolutely.
Their legislators to support us?
Yes, absolutely. And I want to applaud the mayor because he has been a consistent and strong voice for this cause, and that's what it takes. The mayor brings into focus every issue that relates. And the fact that the Congress can tell us how to live and tell us how to die for any reason or no reason, arbitrarily, capriciously, even whimsically, and tell us y'all put AK-47s on the streets. I mean, they couldn't do that anyplace else except here because of our status. And the mayor has articulated that better than anybody and strongly and hasn't backed down. And I appreciate Mayor Gray for that. And what they're doing going to New Hampshire is exactly what we need to do. We also need to start counting the votes, and that's what we're doing here. We're visiting congressional offices. And that works in concert with people from the states telling their members and senators support the statehood bill. We also need to file a lawsuit. I have a lawsuit plan that I think will rock the Congress. And we need to do other external things, like these young people doing the hunger strike. All of that pressure builds to a point where, just as they did with the King Holiday Bill and the South Africa Apartheid Bill and the statue in the rotunda, they're going to have to go with us on it. You know, it'll be easier for them to go with us than to go against us.
And, you know, D.C. has tried so hard, back to a subject I meant to say about the gun control. Don't we have to send that up to Congress after we, the citizens, pass a bill like that? Don't we have to send it to Congress for them to decide whether whether it can go through or not?
Every idea we have has to go up to Congress before it becomes law.
Mm-hmm.
And every dollar we spend, even of our own money, Congress has to tell us we can spend it. From the time we formulate our budget until the time we can spend our own money is 18 months. And that's why our money is more expensive than any other money, because the bond people, them people, Standard & Poor's and Moody's, who said Barack Obama's budget credit rating, you know, for the first time in the history of this country, mm-hmm. people still buying bonds, though they ain't paying no attention to them mm-hmm. Wall Street people. But the bond people say our rating is bad, or it's not as good as others. And so when we borrow money, it's far more expensive. And that's just because of our status. So it's not just positions for politicians or an academic question. Is bread and butter. It's where the rubber meets the road. Congress tells us how to live and tells us how to die, and they can't do that with anybody else.
Well, we're going to have one long question. We're fast running out of time here, much too early, but I wanted to ask you about that song that we talked about, the D.C. Stadium song. What inspired that? Tell us a little bit about the guys who did that song for us and how others can get the CD if they'd like to, and we hope they will, because it's my understanding it will support the statehood movement.
Yes, it does support the statehood movement, and Joe Coleman wrote it. He's the former lead singer with the Platters, has a velvet voice, and he sings it with the others in his group, Leonard and Blunt, former lead singers with the Temptations and Drifters, and it's just such an inspirational song, and they put it in a go-go genre. Right now, they can get it by just getting in touch with me. We also have it on iTunes, so the young people know how to go there and download it for 99 cents or something like that.
And how would they get in touch with you?
They can call me, 202-457-0800, 202-457-0800, or aclu-nca.org.
Mm-hmm. That's the website.
Yes.
All right, then. Well, I certainly hope you a lot of success. I have my copy. I heard it first when I was there at your program, and, of course, I purchased my copy.
Yes.
And I'll be urging other friends to get that copy also, because I know that these things not only take time, but they take money. So you
That's
can count
right.
on us and the National Congress to put this issue higher on our agenda. It's always been on our agenda,
yes.
but we just have to put it higher on our agenda. It took us 12 years to get truth in the Capitol.
Yes.
So you know if it's that hard to get truth in the Capitol, Sojourner, of course, I'm talking about.
That's right.
You know how it's going to be challenging, but it's not impossible.
That's right.
So we salute you for your work, and thank you so much for sharing with us. And we hope from time to time you'll give us updates on what's going on and how our listeners can help.
I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, then. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Faye.
All right. Thank you. Those who were listening, we were talking to Johnny Barnes, and if you missed the discussion, you can go to artistfirst.com, and of course, we archive all of our interviews, so you certainly can hear that interview all over. We're going to a short break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Ms. Sharon Lowe.
Listening to Celebrating Truth on the Artist First Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Dr. E. Faye Williams, Esquire.
Thank you so much, Tony, and welcome back to Celebrating Truth. We'd like to invite our listeners to become members of the National Congress of Black Women, or go to our website and just look at the kinds of things that we're doing to improve our communities. You can get us at www.nationalcongressbw.org. That's www.nationalcongressbw.org. Or you may call us at 202-678-6788. We welcome supporters. We welcome new friends, new members. And, of course, if you'd like to donate to any of our wonderful causes, after you look at our website for any of our community service programs, again, you can do that on our website at www.nationalcongressbw.org. Our next guest is a very special friend, Ms. Sharon Lowe, is from Pensacola, Florida. I always say she's from the Washington, D.C. area, but she moved away. And I want you listeners to know that she's the best computer technician, or whatever it's called, that I know. And I was so sorry when she moved away. I'm just waiting for her to come back to Washington so that she can look at my crazy computers, because she does the impossible. Welcome, Sharon. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Oh, blessed and highly favored. You know, we've got some strange things happening with regard to voting in a few elections, and most notably in the presidential elections. Let's talk about that. And when did you begin to notice that what was going on, say, around 2000, 2004? You were aware of all those strange happenings, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, you know, 2000 made international news. We watched in dismay what was going on in Florida and just could not understand how this could be happening in America. You know, and just as we were recovering from the fiasco of the 2000 election.
Now, that was the in the presidential election, right, with Al Gore.
Right. That was the Al Gore election. And just as we gotten over that, thought we had gotten over that, we entered into the election cycle for 2004. When we start to see what we thought was very erratic behavior by the then Secretary of Election in Ohio, he made some very aggressive moves with what people were coined as voter suppression. Voter suppression is in the news today because of the number of legislation in various state houses across the country, which they're implementing voter ID restrictions.
Well, let's go back to some of these abnormalities and irregularities in 2004. Now, that was the election of John Kerry, right?
And, okay. Right, and the sitting president, George Bush.
Mm-hmm. And well, first of all, none of us could believe that George Bush was elected, but we accepted him. We didn't call him a whole bunch of names like people are doing with our president today. But
tell
us a little bit. And we didn't disrespect his wife, for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Every time I think I turn on the computer or look in the paper, I'm looking at somebody who's in some way disrespecting the First Lady of the United States. And, you know, they always answer with... well, we've apologized to her, but I tell them all, that's not enough. She's the First Lady of the United States of America. They owe all of us an apology, and that's everyone who's been saying stupid stuff like Sensenbrenner, Jane, Congressman Jane Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin, and Mike O'Neill from Kansas, the Speaker of the House. I'm sure our listeners have been hearing about all these things, but all you have to do is Google those names and the First Lady, and you'll see what silly stuff they're doing. So it's really important who our president is, who our leader is, and we're seeing some of the worst behavior right now. But let's go back to the Kerry and George Bush race of 2004. What exactly were some of the things you noticed there? And I mean, I've seen the data, so I know that it's correct. But just tell our listeners what were some of the things you noticed there.
Well, some of the things that we noticed, and the reason why individuals were aware that something abnormal was going on, because a group of programmers and computer tech types pretty much made a pact that we would divide up the country and we would monitor the websites of the Secretary of Elections. So as the votes were tallying, we were gathering information and making comparison. And one of the areas that I was focused on was Ohio.
And you were doing this through technology, right?
Right. We were online. We were basically tied to Verified Voting Organization.
Mm-hmm.
Voter Protection, basically, is what that was. But we were watching various states, and Ohio in particular, and that's when we start to notice irregularities like a precinct with, let's say, 600 voters, but actually cast 4,000 votes. We start seeing this abnormality in other areas, like in Perry County. The number of votes cast in Perry County was greater than the number of voters.
Mm-hmm.
During the day,
You could tell that by what, the number of people who were registered to vote?
Right, the number of people who were registered to vote, like in one county, was 638. But the number of votes cast was 4,258.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish your point.
But there were several counties. There are There were 12 counties in particular where we noticed that there was a spike, pretty much what we call ghost populations, where we have more people voting than there are actually people in the towns or counties.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it your thought that maybe the then sitting president's party had mounted a campaign to subvert the will of the people in 2004?
Well, they were pretty much up front. Companies like Daibo, Sequoia, ES&S, they say that they were militant Republican voters. The data today reveals that at least 357,000 voters were disenfranchised. Their ballots were spoiled, and they were not counted. Mm-hmm. There was also, there were other instances where we get different counts at different points in time, but the number 357,000 is just a large number in comparison to the number of votes that Kerry actually needed.
Especially when you think about what just happened in Iowa with an 8-vote difference, what a difference that could have made.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we had occurrences where we know that 50,000 votes in different counties, like in the Cleveland, Toledo area, were spoiled. We know that in Toledo, the clerk there didn't process 20,000 registration for Democratic voters.
Mm-hmm.
There was a massive effort underway to suppress the voter turnout.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know a lot of astounding things happened in the 2004 election, but what would you say was perhaps the single most astounding thing that you found?
Well, one in every four voter who registered to vote and showed up to the poll found that they were not on the rolls.
And how did that happen? Was that explained?
They explained it, well, really it was voter caging. That's when a GOP direct mailing house will send out mailers to Democratic voters, and if the Democratic voter failed to respond to the mailing, they will challenge that vote, and they will go back, compile a purge list
mm-hmm.
from the number of individuals who will not respond to their mailers. So when these individuals arrive to vote, their names are not on the rolls.
No warning, no nothing. They just think they're on the rolls and they're not.
Right. Because by law, if they're going to be challenged, they're supposed to be given a warning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that when I ran for office, a similar thing happened in Louisiana. The Republican Party mailed out things to people, and if those were returned, they then challenged them. They started this a long time ago. They challenged them when they came to the polls. They would just take them off the rolls. And the people, you know, maybe it was a mistake. Maybe the person had not moved or had, you know, left but came back to the same home, you know, maybe from college or what have you. But
right.
They still disqualified them.
Now, right. And a lot of times it was service members and largely students.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you find any other evidence of problems in Ohio? Like, you know, sometimes there were long lines and bad weather, that kind of thing. Was there any of that in Ohio?
Well, you know, as incredible as it sounds, individuals stood in line to vote for over 12 hours.
Wow.
And
we talk about these African nations and others that do that. How can
right. Right, in 2004, especially around liberal arts colleges,
mm-hmm.
The students you know, they dug in, and they said they weren't going to leave, and they stood there for over 12 hours.
Right. And I remember there was a lot of rain in some of those places.
Right. It was bad. It was inclement. It was bad weather. But they persisted, you know.
And I'm sure there were some people who were discouraged, though, and that's where the problem came for people like John Kerry, you know, when people just gave up and went home. What about any other problems? Were there any others that you noticed? And I guess what I want to get to really is, did anybody investigate these voting problems in places like Ohio?
Oh, absolutely. Representative Conyers, he heard the testimonies of people. They were coming out. They were angry. The crowds, you know, they stormed the Ohio Capitol. Mm-hmm. They were very angry, and they were very vocal about what happened on that voting day. He listened, and he took his committee to Ohio. They held hearings. Individuals were able to go on the record to give testimony about what actually happened, what their experiences were that day. Individuals who gave sworn testimony that when they pushed the lever for Kerry, it would register Bush. There were hundreds of sworn testimonies to what we call vote flipping.
Mm. Well, you know, again, going back to a race in which I ran just for Congress, not the president, but for Congress, a similar thing happened in a lot of areas where people do not read or write well. They use numbers for the candidates, and what happened in some of the instances was my number was placed by another candidate's name, so that candidate, you know, got my votes. What were intended to be my votes? I don't know that many states use that, but let's go back to the hearing from Representative Conyers. Did anything ever happen from that? Were there any results?
Well, I guess he returned, and he published a massive report. He outlined unprecedented voter irregularities, and he basically concluded that the problem was caused by the intentional and willful misconduct of then Secretary of State Blackwell.
Well, what was happening, say, before that? Did we have any clue that Ohio was going to be a problem for that election in 2004?
Oh, sure. We had indicators when there was a massive voter registration drive going on there. Because of the massive voter turnout, not voter registration drive, the foot race, the Republicans actually lost the foot race. There was a 250% increase in Democratic voters versus 25%. So they lost the foot race as far as voter registration, and they turned to this voter caging that I spoke of earlier, but it had a twist. Instead of just silently dropping the vote, they said that the individuals who were being purged, they had to come to a court hearing to defend their right to vote. So they were able to scare away thousands of voters who just feared going to court to say, they didn't know what to say, and they did not know how to defend their right to vote. On the day of voting, activists went door to door
saying that they were going to deliver absentee ballots for individuals. They also went through communities telling the Republican voter that today is the day to vote. But the Democratic voters, they told them that the following day was the day to vote. Mm. So a lot of disinformation being pumped into the predominantly Democratic precincts.
And I know we went through a lot of news accounts about the Republican Party's efforts to stem the tide of new registrations. Well, I'm thinking of places like Wisconsin now, Ohio, and all these 30-some states that are, you know, putting on efforts to try to suppress the vote. Do you know if there is anything going on to try to counter that? These legislators in many of these states are trying to put up laws. For instance, we talked about some of them where students are away in college and wouldn't be able to get back home to vote, but they register in the town where they either where they are in college or they send absentee ballots back. And these things are presenting problems for a lot of students. There's just a lot of suppression methods, it seems, that are going on. And you just wonder, why is it that the Republican Party is so busy now, as many as 37 states, I'm told, trying to suppress the vote? What is that, because they think more Democrats are registered? Or what? Just what is the problem?
Well, it sounds to me that the story is the same. There's this movement afoot where there's a large voter registration drive again, and it seems as though not only are they focusing in a small, in a single state like Ohio, they've gone national with the very same tactic that proved to be very successful in Ohio. But there's pushback. You know, there are groups out there who are educating the voters. They're out ahead of this. They're in communities. They're going to churches. They're going to campuses. They're at every place that they could possibly find a group of people gathered to inform them. They are sending them to the election offices to change the address so that they will not face these challenges. So there's a lot of effort underway to avert the communities and to have them to be in a posture of protecting the vote. I think that's very important when we arm the community themselves to make them a part of the voter protection effort rather than having some national-level organization come in to protect the vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know, Lord knows you all have had your problems with voting in Florida. Have you noticed any increased effort of that in the last year, or do you see an increase in effort of people to counter what happened in Florida in 2000 and in Ohio in 2004? I mean, I know the other day I read that fraternities were getting together, putting together a super PAC so that they could do, you know, a lot of work surrounding the campaign of 2012. And I know during the past, our organization, the National Congress, put together a political action committee. We're hoping to be very, very actively involved all around the country. And I just wonder if you're noticing such efforts of groups to that normally are thought of as nonprofits or maybe not having been, you know, very highly politically active, but they're beginning to be active and finding a legal way to be more actively involved in voting and campaigns.
Yes, I see it happening. I see more people or more individuals gathering and forming PACs. I see coalitions building where you would normally find groups single-handedly heading up voter registration, voter education efforts. Because of changes in Florida's law, it's easy for one to actually end up in jail. So I think that by the groups coming together, educating themselves, educating each other, it's improving the outreach in the community, and I think it's going to help.
Well, let me ask you, did anybody file any suits as a result of the 2004 election? Is there anything backing us up, like a court, court order, a court case that we can look to for help in the coming 2012 election?
Yes, recently. There's the King Lincoln Bronswell versus Blackwell case. In this case, it pretty much affirmed the results from the Conyers hearing. It affirmed individuals who gave testimony about irregularities. But this is a little bit higher than the voter suppression. This is another angle on it. In this particular case, we have the deposition of an IT guru who worked for the Bush family and Karl Rove. Michael Connell gave his deposition. He pretty much admits that he was involved in an action where they transferred the voter database from Ohio to Tennessee. And it was a known unknown because we couldn't prove it at the time that this transfer occurred. But with the person actually participating in the file transfer, we can now say with certainty that a file transfer occurred. And
we've just about run out of time. I see we're going to have to have you come back on this subject. You have so much information. I apologize that we have run out of time, but I would like to compliment you on your work, ask you to continue doing that, and we'll have you back later if you'll come back to see us.
Absolutely. And thanks for...
All right. Thank you so much, Sharon Lowe of Pensacola, Florida. And, of course, she's an expert on these things. She's studied so much about voter suppression in several elections now. We're going to have to say goodbye to you here, but if you'd like to join the great things that we do in communities across the nation, let us know by calling 202-678-6788. Maybe you'd like to be a donor to one of our community service programs. You can do that by going to the National Congress, or just National Congress, BW.org. And, of course, don't forget when you come to Washington, stop by the Capitol and see that Sojourner Truth statue that we were able to put in the Congress about 3 years ago. Thank you so much for listening, and that's it for Celebrating Truth today. God bless, and we'll see you next week.